This is NHPR News. I'm Rick Gamley. It's 9:06.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. When it comes to the economy, this year's Republican presidential primary contenders share many of the same views and support many of the same prescriptions to cure our economic woes. But when it comes to foreign policy, that's where you begin to see differences. Some would quickly pull U.S. forces out of Afghanistan. Others advocate a more cautious approach. Some believe the U.S. and NATO air campaign in Libya was the right move. Others opposed it. And while some GOP contenders espouse free trade, others promote a Made in America ideal. One theme does unite most of these candidates, however, a belief that President Obama's foreign policy has been too apologetic and not muscular enough, with promises that they would adopt a more vigorous approach. Today in The Exchange, we continue our Issue Tuesday series, where we focus on one key topic in this year's presidential primary. This hour, it's foreign policy. We'll contrast the Republican primary candidates' views on that topic, but first, to see how loudly this subject is resonating in New Hampshire voters' minds this election season, we begin with Andy Smith. He's an associate professor of political science at UNH and director of the UNH Survey Center. Hi, Andy.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, how important do voters this year say a candidate's views or experience in foreign policy is in these 2012 elections, Andy?
Well, actually, not very much. As you mentioned in your lead-up, this is an economic issue. Only 4% of people in our likely Republican primary voters in our most recent poll said that national security issues, drawn very broadly, are the most important thing in their vote for who they're going to support in the primary. So it's way down the list. But that said, people in the country are not happy with the direction of U.S. foreign affairs, or people in New Hampshire particularly. Only 49% approve of the way that President Obama is handling foreign affairs, 44% disapprove. And not surprisingly, Republicans strongly disapprove. Only 17% of Republicans approve of Obama's handling of foreign affairs. So it's there in the background, but it's certainly not in the forefront of what voters are considering in this election.
How different is that, Andy, from 4 years ago and even 8 years ago?
Well, even 4 years ago, foreign policy was absolutely the top issue on the Republican side. At about this time in 2007, 19% of likely Republican primary voters said that the war in Iraq was the most important issue. Another 7% mentioned terrorism, and another 2% mentioned Iran. And it's interesting that Iran is still around there, which I think points out one of the major things about foreign policy. It's an issue that comes and goes, but it always has the potential of completely changing the dynamic of the race. So currently we've got this race that's really driven by economics, but should things heat up with Iran, like we're maybe seen right now with the downing of a drone recently, we could be right back in a foreign policy election.
Well, and it's interesting. I remember talking to you and others 4 years ago. That race started out as a foreign policy race with the debate over Iraq and Afghanistan, and then it changed into an economics race with the financial meltdown that we saw in late 08.
Right, and there's the potential for this happening this time. So when voters are considering who to be the president, economic issues typically are on the forefront of their mind, especially when the economy's bad. But I think that people have to remember we're electing the commander-in-chief here, and that foreign policy experience is something that you may not have, and you may not expect to need it, but when things, your crisis happens, you want to make sure that you've got somebody in there that knows what they're doing.
You know, there's sort of two elements to this issue, Andy. There's the national security issue. You mentioned Iran and so forth, but there's also the economic end of it. Trade, people are worried about China's economic influence. Do people differentiate between these two areas of foreign policy?
Well, I think that it's difficult for a lot of people to really draw that distinction. But I think the secondary level, the concern about our relationships with China, for example, the concern about what's happening with the European euro crisis and overall debt in the United States, it creates a sense of unsettlement, unease among the American electorate. And the foreign policy issues even if they're not particularly major ones, like say the Libyan involvement, they add a layer of unease to what the voters are thinking about, and it actually gives Republicans, you know, more things to hang their hat on, more things to be angry about with the administration.
Well, Andy, it's always good to talk to you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good to talk to you.
Andy Smith, Associate Professor of Political Science at UNH and Director of the UNH Survey Center. Again, today in The Exchange, it's our Issue Tuesday series, and this week we're examining foreign policy. Let's get your thoughts into our conversation. What have you heard from the candidates on international topics, whether it's Afghanistan or China or the Middle East? Which presidential hopeful do you think has the best broad approach toward America's relations with the rest of the world? Give us a call, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. We have two guests joining us from D.C., Jim Lindsay, Senior Vice President, Director of Studies, and Maurice R. Greenberg, Chair at the Council on Foreign Relations, an independent think tank. He also writes a blog called The Water's Edge. And Jim Lindsay, great to have you. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me, Laura.
Also with us in studio, Wayne Lesperance, Professor of Political Science at New England College, Director of the Center for Civic Engagement there. And Wayne, good to have you too. Thank you.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, Wayne, set the table for us. Andy started out, but I'd love to hear from you too. In terms of the role foreign policy is playing in this Republican primary campaign.
I think Andy said it very nicely when he said that we are a nation with unease about our foreign policy. We know that the numbers tell us that folks are generally not happy with the direction that we're going. Towards the end of the Bush administration, there was a very similar feeling, and there's some question as to how much change has actually taken place between President Bush and President Obama. But the fact remains is that we are a nation at war. We still have troops in harm's way in at least two hotspots with potential for other places. We are a nation that, compared to 4 years ago, has refocused our attention on domestic economic issues, and yet we still are that nation at war with troops abroad. It's remarkable to me that when you look at candidates' websites or what candidates are talking about, very little is focused on foreign affairs, on national security. There are a few blurbs here about Iran or about China, but very little substance on those pieces. And so, you know, it's not something we've talked a whole lot about. We've had about a dozen debates and forum. There's been two that have focused on national security issues. And one of the things that I do during debates is I end up on Twitter sort of talking about what I'm observing. And I remember on multiple occasions at multiple debates saying, gosh, we are an hour into this and there has yet to be one question about America's role in Afghanistan or Iraq or foreign affairs in general. So we have this situation where we are very much navel-gazing as a nation. We are looking at the economic situation. We're looking at jobs, which are the two most critical issues that voters say we face. And yet there are these challenges out there that are very much related to what's happening domestically and economically, whether it is the euro, whether it is trade relationships, free trade agreements that we've been signing. And yet there's not a whole lot of attention by voters there. I think Andy was very right to point out that that all can change very quickly.
As we've seen before.
Absolutely. If there is some sort of a crisis, if something with Iran heats up or some other hotspot flares up in the world. So, you know, it behooves us to spend this time on a show like this to actually looking at what have the candidates said about these various issues so we can make more informed choices.
Well, and Jim, there are a lot of issues to consider and lots of differences among these candidates, and we'll get into that for sure. But can you, Jim, divide them into philosophical camps? You know, for example, this group believes in a more muscular foreign policy. This group is more about trade and commerce than military power. Can you do that with this group, Jim?
Well, you certainly can, Laura. And as you look at the candidates remaining in the race, there's really sort of one big divide, that is between those who are internationalists and those who are not. And in the non-internationalist, or as they prefer to call it, the non-interventionist school is clearly Ron Paul. Ron Paul's foreign policy is very different than that of the other candidates in the race. Ron Paul argues that America could make itself more secure by minding its business overseas, and he's been very consistent throughout his career in arguing that the United States needs to bring its troops back home and exit the conflicts it's currently in. Once you get beyond Ron Paul, all the other candidates are various kinds of internationalists. They believe the United States needs to play an active role in the world, and that is the way to provide American security. And they differ in on some of the specifics. You have someone like John Huntsman, the former governor of Utah, who argues that the United States needs to do less in Central Asia, East Asia, one of his major talking points is America's strategic future does not lie in the Hindu Kush, a reference to Central Asia, Southwest Asia. But it's not really clear what Governor Huntsman proposes to do in East Asia. Beyond that, at the other end of the spectrum, you have Rick Santorum, who is quite proudly sort of carrying on what might be called the Reagan-Bush approach to foreign affairs, arguing that the United States should actively use its military and diplomatic power to advance the cause of freedom, is quite committed to sustaining American commitments in Afghanistan and Iraq. And in between there, you have candidates like Mitt Romney, who are trying to walk a fine line in which they indicate they understand they hear many Americans who are worried about being overcommitted abroad, but at the same time trying to signal to Americans who want to see the assertion of American might that they're paying attention to that as well.
What do you think, Wayne? How would you categorize these candidates broadly, and then we'll get into some specifics?
No, I think that that's exactly right. I think Paul sort of stands alone generally as somebody who is not an interventionist that believes that there are constitutional questions associated with the amount of intervention that we're doing. Paul, who also, when the discussion about Iran's nuclear weapons program came up, sort of said, well, you know, it is what it is. Why should we care? Why should we be involved there? And said things like, you know, this discussion about Iran's nuclear weapons program reminds him of the run-up to the war in Iraq, a lot of propaganda. So Paul has certainly set himself aside. We've also heard some interesting comments from folks like Michelle Bachmann, talking about Pakistan being too nuclear to fail, which might have been the line of the debate, the most recent debate. That is that we can't afford to abandon Pakistan because of their nuclear weapons. And there's an interesting conversation there. I think what strikes me is there's a lot of general observations without much meat on the bone for these candidates and their positions. We haven't gotten into the detail. And I think that's really critical to tease those pieces out, other than just sort of talking points about supporting Israel or trade with China, things like that.
All right. And we will get into some of the detail in just a couple of minutes. Our phone number here in the exchange is 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Again, today in the exchange, it's Issue Tuesday, and the issue this week is foreign policy. Give us a call. What are you hearing these Republican primary candidates say about foreign policy? What broad approaches do you like? What broad approaches do you not like? Give us a call and we'll be right back.
Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, from Collins Dentistry for Children, treating the dental needs of infants through teens in southern New Hampshire with locations in Nashua and Pelham, collinsdentistry.com. From Holloway Motor Cars of Manchester, authorized Mercedes-Benz dealer, luxury automobiles that feature performance, safety, fuel efficiency, and iconic design, benzcars.com. And from PSNH, sponsor of the Girl Scouts of the Green and White Mountains Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math programs for grades 4 through 8, girlscoutsgwm.org. More on the Republican presidential candidates and their stances on foreign policy on the exchange here on NHPR and at 10 on the Diane Rehm Show, new concerns in relations between the United States and Iran. This is NHPR.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, our Issue Tuesday series continues with looking at what the Republican presidential candidates are saying about U.S. foreign policy. Let's hear from you, 1-800-892-6477. What have you heard from these candidates about hot international topics like Afghanistan or China or the Middle East? Which of these presidential hopefuls that has been campaigning in New Hampshire do you think has the best approach toward America's relations with the rest of the world? Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. We have two guests, James Lindsay, he's at the Council on Foreign Relations in D.C., and Wayne Lesperance, professor of political science at New England College. And to you, Jim, I think first, so let's get into some specifics and go first to Afghanistan, because, you know, Wayne's right, even though we're all focused on the economy, we are still a nation at war, lots of troops there. What differences are you hearing, Jim, in terms of when the United States should leave, how much of a U.S. presence should remain once the U.S. is gone?
Great question, Laura. I would basically break it up into four camps. One, you have Ron Paul, who is saying we should come home and come home right away. And that's consistent with his non-interventionist philosophy. Second, you have John Huntsman, who's argued for a rapid drawdown to a much smaller force. The exact numbers are a little bit unclear, but he would go from the current level of almost 100,000 down in the range of somewhere between 15 and 20, and those troops would carry on counterterrorism operations. You have on the other end, you have Rick Santorum, who wants to continue the surge that began under President Obama. And then you have Governor Romney, who has said that before he did anything, he'd really want to talk to his military commanders on the ground for guidance. But he has been critical on one specific issue of the Obama approach to Afghanistan, which is that he believes that the troops are beginning to come out 3 months too early.
Well, and it's interesting what you say, Jim. Other foreign policy folks have said, you know, it's hard for these Republicans to criticize Obama's foreign policy because Obama isn't really that different from what President Bush did. I wonder what you think about that.
Wow, that's a long and complicated question, which could take up our whole show. And I think it depends upon the issue you're talking about. On many issues, the administration has clearly handled things differently than the Bush administration. And other issues, more similar, largely because of the nature of the problems you're dealing with. They don't necessarily lend themselves to easy resolution.
Can you give us an example there, Jim?
Well, obviously, one where the administration's policy has been closest to the George W. Bush administration has been detention policy for terrorists, and that's largely been driven by the inability of the Obama administration to persuade Congress to allow it to close down Guantanamo Bay.
That was a big selling point during the campaign.
That was one of the president's signature proposals during the campaign. It was one of the first acts he made when president, but he couldn't get Congress to go along. Obviously, if you go to the other end, you have the question of Iran, where there is certainly similarity from the Bush administration to the Obama administration, in the sense that both have warned about the threat Iran poses, have tried to negotiate sanctions with other countries, have hinted that they may be prepared to do something beyond that, but haven't yet done it. Obviously, on that case, where you have an argument for the Republicans is that if George W. Bush had stayed on, or if a Republican were president now, that they would be taking more vigorous action. And indeed, Iran is sort of, I think, indicative of a lot of the way that talking about foreign policy happens in the campaign, which is a lot of the talk by Republicans is really about where they think Obama has fallen down, and a lot less about what specifically they would do. So, for instance, on Iran, much of the Republican complaints have been focused on if only Barack Obama had vigorously embraced the June 12th movement in Iran, we would have pushed out the current regime and things would be better. And that's an untestable proposition, but it's certainly a position that resonates on the campaign trail.
What do you think, Wayne? How different are these Republican presidential candidates from Barack Obama? Again, there's a lot of similarities there.
There are, and I think that most of the criticisms are criticisms of style, right? So back to Iran for a second, you know, there's at least a few candidates who say things like, you know, the Iranians don't respect us, they don't fear us, and if we were just a little tougher, if we were just a little more firm with them, that somehow there'd be a different outcome. And yet, you know, we had 8 years of President Bush being tough and firm, and there wasn't much of a change in the outcomes in Iran. The same thing with Israel. Israel's a good sort of point along these lines, that this sort of notion that the president has failed in terms of having betrayed our greatest ally in the Middle East. This is sort of the language that they use in suggesting that peace be based on 1967 borders in Israel.
That was Obama's proposal.
That was Obama's suggestion that that be the basis for conversation. And he was very much criticized, has been criticized by the Republican candidates, that being a failure of leadership, of not standing with our friends, that sort of thing. And you also hear about this in terms of the Arab Spring, that either we weren't there early enough to support democratic elements, or that we did not fully appreciate the dangers of what could come after these democratic elements. So with Mubarak's fall, for example, who takes over in Egypt may be very unfriendly to Israel, very unfriendly to the United States.
Of course, there's a question of how much the U.S. really should orchestrate.
Well, right. But again, these aren't substantive criticisms as much as they are criticisms of leadership, of style. And that's the sort of common narrative now with Republicans, that whether it's on domestic issues or foreign policy, there's a leadership gap.
Let's take some calls, both of you, and then I've got a lot more questions. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. You can email us, too, if you'd like, the address exchange@nhpr.org. We want your questions or thoughts on what you're hearing the Republican candidates say about foreign policy. And first up is Carl in Wilmington. Hi, Carl, you're on the air. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I had a question regarding the Canada's views on foreign policy as it relates to foreign aid. Specifically, at a time in our country when we're really feeling the crunch of the economic crisis and we're having a hard time funding our own programs that lend assistance to our citizens, how are the Republican candidates justifying spending billions of dollars on foreign aid?
Carl, this is a great question, and you're right. It does give people an opportunity to see how these candidates view America's role in the world. What do you think, Jim?
Well, the Republican candidates have taken note of the sentiment Carl just articulated, and I think they have responded to it. Clearly, the most obvious candidate on this score would be Ron Paul, who essentially would end foreign aid. Then you have Rick Perry, who's argued that he would zero out foreign aid and then go back in and decide who he would give aid to, basically what we would call a zero-based budgeting approach to foreign aid, so that countries that were friendly to the United States would get aid, those who were less friendly wouldn't get aid. Then you have Newt Gingrich in one of the debates talked at some length about how he had historically been a big friend of foreign aid, but now thinks it needs to be rethought. He's never really sort of spelled out what that means. And other candidates have indicated that they would be tougher in terms of handing out aid, particularly with respect to Pakistan. Obviously, Governor Perry of Texas said he wouldn't give any aid to Pakistan because he doesn't trust them. And that sort of sparked in one of the recent debates one of the more interesting conversations, because both former Senator Rick Santorum and Representative Michelle Bachmann responded by saying, in essence, whoa, the world's a bit more complicated than that. You've already referred to it, Laura, that Representative Bachmann mentioned that Pakistan was too important to fail. And indeed, this sort of gets to one of the realities of campaigning, that is, what sounds really good on the campaign trail may not really work when you're governing. And I think that's what Senator Santorum and Representative Bachmann alluded to in the debate. One final thing I would point out, that is, the amount of aid the United States gives as a percentage of the federal budget is less than a penny on the dollar.
So it's not as big as voters perceive it to be, Jim?
Voters, if you look at polls indicate that Americans have a exaggerated sense of foreign aid.
What do you think, Wayne? Carl's right. People do, you know, take umbrage at this idea that at a time when we're struggling at home, we're sending money to possibly unfriendly nations like Pakistan.
Sure. Just as a funny, I guess, note, in my intro to international studies classes, I ask students, how much do we spend in foreign aid? And usually they come in around 20% of our budget goes to foreign aid.
So really?
It's really way out there. These are first-year students. You get that. And my favorite sort of statistic from this, an old professor of mine told me this once, that Americans spend more on dog food each year than we spend in foreign aid. So just a little perspective. Nevertheless, when folks are out of work, when they're struggling to make their home payments, when they're being foreclosed on, when life is tough and they're trying to imagine how things are going to get better, and they hear that we're sending money to countries who are having protests in the streets where they're burning American flags, it's a tough sell. And I think Jim's exactly right. The Republican candidates have responded to that. I think for me, the more interesting wrinkle is what folks like John Huntsman are saying with regard to countries like Pakistan, that we need to have a more grown-up conversation about tying that aid to actual specific outcomes. So conditioning our aid to things like help with counterproliferation and counterterrorism and the war in Afghanistan. That's a grown-up conversation that has to happen. And I think one of the things that comes out of this is that there's a lot of platitudes, there's a lot of very general observations that at the end of the day won't stand up to reality, because, you know, it's a very complex world we live in, and we have interests, and foreign aid is a way for us to cultivate those interests.
Our number again here on the exchange is 1-800-892-6477. Carl, thanks for that one. Again, 1-800-892-6477, or send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Calling in from Dover is Wayne. Hi, Wayne, you're on the air. Go ahead. Wayne, are you with us?
Okay, hopefully Wayne will call back. Again, the number 1-800-892-6477. You know, Jim, before you mentioned the detention policy of terror suspects in Guantanamo Bay and Obama's policy being very different from George Bush's there, what broadly, Jim, about the issue of national security, how does that get folded into this issue of foreign policy? And what types of actions do you hear these candidates saying they'd take to protect America from outside threats?
Well, several observations on that point, Laura. One is Andy Smith noted at the top is that Americans right now are not thinking about foreign affairs or national security issues. They're really worried about domestic issues. Nonetheless, what happens in the foreign arena, what candidates say about that, do sort of convey to Americans some sense of what a person's leadership capabilities are going to be. Voters know that part of a president's job is going to be handling things overseas. That's one of the reasons why Mr. Kaine's problems with his answer on Libya to the Milwaukee Sentinel-Journal became such an issue. The third thing I would just sort of observe about all of this is that for candidates, talking about national security can also be a very dangerous way for them to go, because it has the potential to get them into some hot water if they make a mistake, if they say the wrong thing, in part because for many of these candidates don't come out of a background where they spend a lot of time on foreign affairs, are really comfortable with the issues. And so there's a natural tendency then really to keep the comments relatively broad. I'm going to defend America. I'm going to be strong. And to focus much of their talking points on what it is they see President Obama as having done wrong. And basically, I think, as Wayne mentioned quite nicely before, a lot of the Republican criticism is really some variant of the argument that the president hasn't led, that he doesn't believe in a strong America, and that he's going around the world on an apology tour for the United States.
Well, and that's a point I did want to ask you about, Wayne. You know, when it comes to foreign policy, what are voters looking for? Is it a broad worldview that they want to know, an ideological position, or do they just want to feel comfortable that, okay, my candidate has a command of the facts?
I think it's a little bit of all of those things, but I think most importantly, looking for confidence or looking for somebody who can is a leader, somebody who can really fill out that role of commander-in-chief. That's probably the most important role the president plays. So when this person stands up before us and says, you know, we are in a situation where we're going to send American men and women into harm's way, am I going to have confidence and faith that this person, you know, knows what they're talking about and is really in command of the facts here? So I think that's part of it. I think the Republicans have another interesting wrinkle in all this. For all this talk of failed leadership or the apology tour, President Obama got Osama bin Laden. He's the one. His administration got the chief terrorist, the architect of 9/11. He was also, for all the criticism of going into Libya, he was there when, you know, Gaddafi was eliminated, was taken out of his role as head of state. So, you know, whereas Republicans typically are stronger on foreign affairs, on national security issues, this president has had some successes. And so it's interesting to see them sort of acknowledge it but not spend a whole lot of time on it, moving on to where the so-called global apology tour.
It's interesting. I was reading a summary yesterday of multiple conservative columnists, pundits on foreign policy, Wayne. And yeah, they said what you said. They said, you know, it's a little tricky needle for Republicans to thread this year, given some of the national security successes that President Obama has had.
Right. And so I think what you focus on is okay, acknowledge it, but move on and talk about things like, is our military really up to snuff? Is there enough funding? And the discussion about cutting significant cuts to Defense Department spending is coming up more and more. Are we prepared for the next threats? Is it time to come out? And what happens when we leave Afghanistan? What happens when we are finally out of Iraq? So, you know, you focus on those issues. I think the biggest issues right now, aside from Afghanistan and Pakistan, are Iran and Israel. And those things going forward. At least that's what's being focused on quite a bit by candidates on the campaign trail.
And China. And I want to ask both of you gentlemen about that in just a moment. But let's go back to Wayne in Dover. I think you're there this time, Wayne, right?
I am, Laura. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
And thank you, panelists, and great show today. I'd like to make a comment about the two messages that rang very loudly in the last debate, or actually probably the last two debates. One is that torture is on the table, as far as use in interrogation practices, and number two, war with Iran is inevitable. And the reason I say this is Michelle Bachmann made a very bold assertion, or quoted Mahmoud Ahmadinejad as having said, if we have nuclear weapons, we are going to attack Israel and we are going to attack the United States. And I noticed it didn't even raise a brow with five of the other candidates, you know, with the exception of Ron Paul and John Huntsman, as you've mentioned earlier. Now, I checked with a history teacher of mine, and he substantiated what I thought. I don't think anybody has ever made that sort of bold statement to us, because those will be fighting words. And he cited Nikita Khrushchev, said, you know, he's going to bury us. And then even Nikita Khrushchev backtracked and said, oh, well, we were talking about your economy. So, you know, those would.
Well, Wayne, yeah, thanks for the call. And boy, Iran keeps coming up, Jim. What about what was said at that foreign policy debate about what course the U.S. should take in with Iran? This was an area where the Republicans said that President Obama has been squishy.
Well, they certainly argue that President Obama was squishy, but what the Republican candidates put on the table was, with the exception of Ron Paul, largely a restatement of what administration policy would be. I mean, again, Ron Paul, I think as Wayne alluded to before, would simply not worry about Iran. He doesn't really see it as an issue for the United States. It's certainly one for Israel, but as he's argued time and again, he believes Israel can defend its own interests. But in terms of the rest of the field of Republican candidates, in essence, they've talked a lot tougher, and they've been very critical, particularly, as I mentioned before, of how President Obama handled the June 12th protest movement in Iran. But in terms of actual policy, they really haven't moved the ball very far. Focuses on imposing sanctions. And if sanctions don't work, then what will happen is they will consider military force. And again, that's not that far off from where the administration is. And as a reality, when we talk about the sanctions effort, if we're talking about successes for the Obama administration, it has had considerable success in rallying the international community to put sanctions on Iran and to put growing diplomatic pressure on Iran. Some of the sanctions Republicans would like to impose, like a gasoline sanction, which they call a crippling sanction, have a number of problems, the most notable one being it would force the United States to prevent its allies and friends from buying oil from Iran, which could create some very significant problems.
Well, and good luck saying that to Europe right now, right, Jim? Given all the troubles that they're having there, maybe we'll talk about that after a short break, along with China, and take more of your calls. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. The email is exchange@nhpr.org, and we'll be right back.
Today on Word of Mouth, a mysterious conglomerate is stockpiling American firearms companies. A reporter follows the smoking gun to discover the money and motives behind the powerful Freedom Group. Plus, an author's heroic attempt to build a toaster from scratch. I'm Virginia Prescott with an arsenal of new ideas on Word of Mouth. Today at noon and again at 9 p.m. here on NHPR.
Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, from Hanover Street Chop House in Manchester. Fine dining and inspired cuisine in a salon-like setting reminiscent of an old-world steakhouse. Menu and reservations at hanoverstreetchophouse.com. And from the NEEF Network Organizations, a statewide leader assisting students and parents planning for college. Information at nhheaf.org. This is NHPR.
Change, a new book on the making of America's debt crisis and the long road to recovery. Email us your thoughts before the program at exchange@nhpr.org and join us tomorrow morning, live at 9. Today in the Exchange, our presidential primary series called Issue Tuesday continues with an analysis of where the Republican presidential contenders stand on foreign policy. Join our conversation, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. What are you hearing from the candidates as they campaign here in New Hampshire about international topics like China, like the Middle East, like the war on terror, like Afghanistan? Which of these presidential hopefuls do you think has the best overall approach toward America's relations with the rest of the world. Give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. Emails are welcome, exchange@nhpr.org. And Wayne L'Esperance, Jim Lindsay, we can't talk about foreign relations without talking about the elephant in the room. Wayne, that's China. What are these candidates saying they're concerned about with China? Is it all economics, or is there a military worry here as well?
There's a little bit of both. I think it's mostly economics at this point, but they're sort of looking in the horizon and some concern. So you have kind of a good spectrum of points of view about China. You can perhaps start with John Huntsman, who has talked about this idea of a Pacific century coming, and that the United States would do well to focus its attention on the Pacific Rim as opposed to Southwest Asia. Asia and the Middle East as the future, not just for our national focus, but for trade and other kinds of relationships. He doesn't believe that we should be talking about a trade war because that would be very harmful to small businesses, to Americans in general. The other end of that spectrum is someone like Rick Perry, who disagrees that the 21st century is about the Pacific Rim and has tapped into some old Cold War language in describing communist Chinese ending up on the ash heap of history. I mean, you've really got to go back for some of this stuff. And so you have two very different points of view about where we're going with China. Gingrich supports greater trade with China, but he's been critical of their human rights record. Bachman has raised concerns about how much American debt the Chinese hold and the risk of us becoming more beholden to them. Santorum has talked a little bit more about the military concern that China is part of a gathering storm, compares China to countries like Iran. That's certainly, you know, a frightening prospect. If it's true. And then there's Romney, who sort of occupies the middle on this, says we need to be tougher with China. We need to insist on better trade deals with China, kind of a more business approach to dealing with China. But ultimately, we have to trade with China and that there is a lot to be gained from greater, smarter trade.
What do you think about this, Jim? This is a big issue for this campaign.
Well, I think Wayne's done a very able job of taking what has been a very thin Republican discussion of China and giving it its best foot forward. As I watch the debate, what is striking to me is how little the candidates talk about China. And when they do talk about China, they talk about the problem. They don't talk about the solution or what they're prepared to do. And when we talk about China, there are really two issues. One is the economic one, particularly dealing with China's undervalued exchange rate, which makes Chinese goods cheaper on world markets than they otherwise would be, which makes them more competitive. But the second thing is the rise of China, its growing military might, and how it's likely to influence the development of issues in East Asia in the years to come. And as Wayne points out, there has been some discussion on the economic issue. Mitt Romney's talked about getting tougher with the Chinese. John Huntsman has quite rightly pointed out that the Chinese have ways to retaliate against the United States. A trade war wouldn't be in our interest. But on the military side, there has been relatively little sustained discussion of what it is any of these candidates would do in light of the rise of China. To the extent they talk about it, it's been very sort of detailed and marginal. For example, Mitt Romney talks about increasing the ship production rate from 9 to 15. When he becomes president, because presumably the Pacific will require more ships. But none of these candidates, including John Huntsman, who's the former U.S. ambassador to China, has laid forth any sort of strategy for dealing with China or thinking about U.S. relations with China.
Well, and can you really blame him, Jim? I mean, given, again, the American focus right now on jobs.
Well, certainly you can understand why candidates are talking about domestic issues. But, you know, when you talk about jobs, the international economy affects the American economy and our ability to grow, what's going to happen with jobs, what kind of jobs you're going to have. So actually, yes, I think you can be both surprised and critical that the candidates haven't talked more about these issues. It was striking at one of the recent debates, the CNBC debate, in which the first question asked of the candidates was, what would you do about this Eurozone crisis? And the candidates essentially bobbed and weaved and didn't answer it. Mitt Romney, among other things, said it's up for the Europeans to solve. But the reality is that the Eurozone crisis is an American problem, because if the Eurozone falls apart, it will have immense ripple effect throughout the international economy, which could send the American economy into a tailspin. I think one of the things that campaigns can be good at and that we're not seeing in this current campaign is to educate the voting public about the issues and challenges we face. So by not talking about these issues, what we're doing is not helping Americans grasp the real interconnected nature of our globalized world.
Let's take another call. This is Phil in Newmarket. Hi, Phil, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks so much. So I'm actually a veteran and a West Point graduate, and I spent some time over in Afghanistan when I was in the military. And I think that it's there's been a huge shift in our foreign policy since post-9/11 from a national defense really to a national offense, where we're certainly out there, the Bush Doctrine. And I'm glad we're talking about the debt now, because I think back to what Robert Gates said before he left as Secretary of Defense, calling our national debt really our greatest national security crisis. And I mean, I think it's why so many service members are supporting Ron Paul, because he's talking about really pulling soldiers back. And, when you've been overseas, you've seen the way that money is spent. And it's something that's obviously concerning to us as former service members or veterans. So I'm wondering what your take is on that.
Well, and that's a great question, Phil. Can I ask you one before I let you go?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm interested in your question about the debt, but since you spent time in Afghanistan, what do you think about what you hear these candidates saying about that country? Jim laid it out for us before. You know, Ron Paul saying, let's leave and let's leave now. Huntsman saying, let's get out pretty quickly, leave a small force there. Santorum saying, continue the surge. Romney saying, not quite sure, I'll look to the generals for advice. What do you think?
So I think we need a commander-in-chief who's strong enough to make – I mean, certainly you have to understand what the generals are saying on the ground, but the commander-in-chief needs to be strong enough to be the final decision-maker in that. So but anytime one of the candidates say, well, I'm just going to go to the generals on the ground, it's sort of trying to absolve themselves of the final responsibility and sort of ducking around the question, in my opinion. I certainly support Ron Paul's idea that we need to pull out now. We've transitioned from – trying to find Osama bin Laden, the most wanted terrorist in the world, to nation building. And, you know, we have bridges falling apart in this country. We have so much need in this country right now, given the economic downturn. It just does not make sense to be spending the billions upon billions of dollars to blow up bridges there and then rebuild them over there. And,
okay. You
know, securing the border between Afghanistan and Pakistan, while I see some of the importance in that, it certainly isn't more important than securing our border with Mexico or Canada.
Well, and tomorrow, Phil, we'll talk also about U.S. debt and so forth. So we'll talk about that tomorrow, too. But, you know, it's a great point, Wayne L'Esperance. Phil says he thinks our national debt is our greatest national security crisis.
Well, first, Phil, thank you for your service to our country. And I think it's a great question and a great call. There's something intellectually and ideologically murky about where we are when we talk about wanting smaller government, wanting limited government, and they all say this, wanting to reduce our overall economic footprint in the United States in terms of government spending, and yet continuing to maintain a presence in a country where we're spending over $2 billion a week, where the outcomes we can't predict, and that while we believe and we hope that there'll eventually be a transition to Afghan control over their own affairs, nobody really seriously believes that's going to happen anytime soon. And so it raises these questions. What are we doing, and how much more blood and treasure should be expended in pursuit of goals that we don't aren't likely to achieve? And I'm editorializing a little bit here, and I apologize. But it is the crux of these questions. So I think the candidates should be held more accountable on this point, that while you want to cut whole departments, right, some of the candidates from our government in the United States, we continue to be engaged in a war that's extremely expensive at the very least.
Well, and we talked earlier, gentlemen, about how foreign aid spending is often a window through which we can gauge a candidate's foreign policy views. What about military spending, Jim? That's also a way to gauge what kind of a foreign policy a candidate might take.
Well, traditionally in the United States, Laura, candidates have liked to argue for more defense spending as a way of saying that they favor the military and that they intend to be strong and tough.
And Mitt Romney certainly has said that in his white
paper. And
Mitt
Romney, that's one of his arguments, is that he would increase defense spending, and he has accused President Obama of cutting defense spending, which is not quite accurate. But again, I want to just echo what Wayne said before and thank the caller for his service to the country. And I think he put his finger on what is one of the two or three biggest challenges facing the United States right now, and that is the question of the debt and putting Washington on a sustainable fiscal course. I think there's actually a fair amount of agreement among political leaders that this is a real problem. The question is, how do you get there? And on this score, you know, the candidates have been saying all things to all people. That is, they have been arguing that it's important to get the deficit under control and to tame the debt monster. But on the same time, that their policies aren't necessarily going to lead to a reduction of the deficit. Many of their plans aren't going to add up. And one of the questions I've always been waiting for a moderator to ask at a debate is, how are you going to not raise taxes, raise defense spending, yet balance the budget? That's very, very hard to do. One final thing about the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. Yes, they are expensive. And if you were to sort of follow Ron Paul's plan, end him right now, you would save the U.S. government something on the order of $100 to $150 billion in a given year. But that's compared to an annual deficit of about $1.5 trillion. So it's a lot more is going to have to be either cut from the federal budget or more taxes paid in order to put the U.S. government in the black.
There's one more topic I want to raise with you, gentlemen, and there's a lot here when we talk about foreign policy. We talked earlier about the Israel-Palestine conflict and Republican criticism of President Obama's suggestions in this area. But Wayne L'Esperance, what about the Arab Spring? We haven't talked about how these candidates have talked about this issue. And there's been some discussion lately about whether the U.S. and NATO should maybe, small m, maybe, do in Syria what they did in Libya. And let's just say up front, that's just a discussion. Seems right. Highly unlikely at this point, but it has been floated. What are the candidates saying?
Rick Perry suggested that, for example, there might be a no-fly zone imposed on Syria at the last debate, and he was criticized by folks like Rick Santorum, who rightly pointed out that the Syrian government is not bombing people. It's not using its air assets. And so what do we really achieve there? I think that there's a broader challenge, and I think this is something where folks like Newt Gingrich and others have actually tapped into something, that while we support democracy, we want to support democratic elements, we need to be very mindful that you don't get to control what the outcome is once there is a turnover of a regime. And so we've seen, for example, in Egypt, some tremendous anti-Christian activity against the Coptic population there. There is at least some suggestion that the Muslim Brotherhood and other Islamic organizations are likely to gain significant power in some of those countries. And, you know, for Republican candidates who talk a lot about the existential Islamic threat, this is very disconcerting to them. So there's been a bit of a mixed bag that on the one hand, there is opposition to the Libya intervention. There is support for greater democratization in these countries. There is, I think, rightfully some concern about what comes after. And I guess the other criticism, again, about leadership is what was the appropriate role for the president to play throughout all of these different cases? And for most of the candidates, their arguments were that Obama did not play the appropriate role.
What do you think, Jim? Arab Spring, what are you hearing the candidates talk about? And again, in fairness, if they haven't given a lot of detail, it's really hard to say what role the U.S. should take in these uprisings, especially given the sentiment against the U.S. in many of these countries.
Well, you're right, Laura. And again, I would say that the candidates have largely talked about what they perceive to be the failings of the Obama administration in responding to the Arab Spring, and very little about what they would in fact do. And here's where, again, you get into the contradictions between sort of the broad themes that the candidates make in their specific criticisms. Again, one of the problems you have on the Republican side is there has been criticism of the president for not doing more, but it's not really clear what it is the Republican candidates would do. Take the issue of foreign aid. Many of the candidates have talked about paring back foreign aid. But many experts would say if you want to have influence in what's happening in the Arab world right now, you want to actually be investing foreign aid in those places. So there's a tension there. But there's a broader set of issues here, which is really the question of to what extent can the United States, whether it's led by Barack Obama or any of the Republican candidates, influence the outcome of the Arab Spring. And now, first, I would sort of note that the term Arab Spring is actually wildly misleading because it implies that this is a season and it will come to an end. And what we're witnessing in the Arab world could go on for many years, could go on for decades, as these countries work out their internal politics in turmoil. And in some cases, like Egypt, Americans are getting what we've long asked for, as we wanted more democracy around the world. And part of the problem we're dealing with now is that these democratic countries, or more democratic, more open countries, are going to make choices that we don't like very much. And that's going to cause a great deal of alarm. But I think fundamentally the issue facing the United States is that we have enormous interest in the Arab world, but it's not clear that we have significant influence in the Arab world.
One last quick question. I'll throw it to you, Wayne. New York Times columnist David Brooks says he expects foreign policy, and in particular the Middle East, to emerge as a much bigger issue than anyone expects right now. And he says that's why journalists need to figure out where these candidates stand. What do you think, Wayne? Is the press in general also not doing its due diligence here in terms of probing these foreign policy issues? Or is it hard for them to get candidates to talk about foreign policy when the candidates really want to talk about jobs, jobs, jobs?
Yeah, and I think it's always convenient to sort of criticize the press. I think in this case, it's a little unfair. Candidates are going to focus on jobs. They're going to focus on the economy because that's what they're being told are the most important issues. And frankly, foreign policy issues are very complex. They defy the 30-second bumper sticker answer that candidates at this point are comfortable giving.
All right. Well, Wayne, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate
it. My pleasure, Laura.
Wayne Lesperance, professor of political science at New England College. Jim Lindsay, it was great to have you. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me, Laura.
Jim Lindsay, Senior Vice President, Director of Studies, and Maurice R. Greenberg Chair at the Council on Foreign Relations. His blog is called The Water's Edge. The Exchange is a production of New Hampshire Public Radio. The engineer today is Craig Martin. Our producer is Ellen Grimm. Our volunteer is Priscilla Malcolm. Our intern is Karen Gohl. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord. The Exchange's executive producer is Keith Shields. And I'm Laura Kanoy.